And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Thomas Keneally, one of Australia's finest writers and the author of A Bloody Good Rant, My Passions, Memories and Demons. As well as his many novels, Tom has published a number of histories, including his three-volume series, Australians. Tom has been observing, reflecting on, and writing about Australia and the human condition for over 50 years. Over that period, he has won the Miles Franklin Award, the Booker Prize, the Los Angeles Book Prize, the Royal Society of Literature Prize, and many others. Tom's book, Schindler's Ark, became Schindler's List in Steven Spielberg's Hollywood movie. In his new book, Tom covers many topics relevant to Australia today and writes with joy about being a grandparent. Tom, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Cable.
Tom, you say that your book is a rant about questions more than delivering messages from the mountaintop. What was your intention in writing the book?
One of my major intentions was to express a deep uneasiness about neoliberal politics and where it might take us. Now, to begin, I am not a socialist, except in the sense I believe in public medicine, which in Australia doesn't qualify you for being a socialist.
You have been called un-Australian at times, I notice.
Oh, yes, indeed. I've mentioned that in the book. And I believe that we ought to have a mixed economy, because everywhere they've tried to strict socialism, anomalies run away with the society. And so even in Chile, I think Allende was what Chile needed. But getting workers actually to run factories themselves and sacking the managers, sadly that didn't work so well.
Well, you've covered a very broad range of topics, but there's one big question that seems to be overshadowing it, which is, what is it to be an Australian? Do you see it as different from being, say, a New South Welshman or a Queenslander?
Well, I do, in that I think, I noticed that when I was on the Constitution Commission in the 80s, that Queenslanders would often say, I'm a Queenslander before I'm an Australian. Mm. Rather like General Robert E. Lee saying, my country is Virginia, when Lincoln offered him the command of the Union forces. He said, my country is Virginia, therefore I have to go back to Virginia and lead their forces. Well, now, I think there are two places where a certain separatism is traditional. One is Western Australia, where the story is, we make all the wealth. Whether it's totally true or not, we make all the wealth and they consume all the benefits of that in the sybaritic southeast in Sydney and Melbourne. And that's a story that still runs well in Western Australia. And I've got a feeling that, you know, I just don't know enough about epidemiology to know who's been right in this debate about state borders. I know there's a short-term political local benefit in closing the Queensland border. Western Australia voted to secede from the rest of us in 1933, and their delegates went to Britain on the basis of a referendum enthusiastically passed by the Western Australians. And they were told that by the British Parliament, though the Australian Parliament, the Australian Constitution was a British Parliamentary Act, they were told nonetheless that they needed to get the permission of the Australian government to secede. And it wasn't forthcoming. And unfortunately, unlike when South Carolina seceded in 1861, it wasn't a matter of federal arms. The idea of sending a federal army across the Nullarbor to reconcile the Western Australians to being Australians was never a realistic proposition. But I think those two states in particular, I think Tasmania too being little, but it has such powerful connections with Victoria. I think it might favour a federation that exists, that's made up of itself in Victoria. But I think there are separatist tensions in some of our states, yes. And the old Sydney-Melbourne thing came into play with the close downs of Melbourne, followed by the lockdowns in Sydney. So all these elements that were in play when we were federating in the late 19th century, they raised their heads again. Even I was making Melbourne jokes when they closed down, even though I knew that was tempting the gods, and even though I knew I'd be punished for it. I said, when they said they were the center of Australian culture, I didn't mean they met microbial culture, and I was punished for that clunky joke much later when we closed down. But yes, there is. It's the states have, through COVID, become far more visible again, haven't they?
They have. Yes. And you wonder if the federal government will get it back in the short term, anyway.
Yes, I think ScoMo, if I might refer to my mother used to call the prime ministers Mister. But I think Mr. Morrison let the states run with it a bit too. He didn't like the border lockdowns necessarily, but he did like the fact that the states were stepping up to take praise and blame for what was happening in their bailiwick. But it is ironic that I have friends who have grandchildren in WA, and they are realistically thinking of going to meet up with them in Singapore because they can't meet up with them in WA.
Well, speaking of grandchildren, you state how surprised you were at your own reaction to becoming a grandparent. I was wondering, you describe the joy you get from them, but what do they get from you, do you think?
The only thing they get is the childlike interest. You enter again, as Dylan Thomas says, the synagogue of the grain of sand. You see things that they draw your attention to. They see things so minutely, whether it's a chained fence. Little boys are big on fences. When I first took my grandson to the zoo, it was the fences rather than the animals that fascinated him. And he would sit and play with a fence for 45 minutes at a time. So you get to see things very acutely, and you're the one that has him all day. When you were a parent, you were too busy to let them fixate on something for too long. But the grandparents can see eternity in a grain of sand and the world in the core of a blossom. And that is a new perception that you had once as a child and that you return to. Yeah, so it's mainly tolerating the enthusiasms. You know, if they like the Wiggles, you can't buy enough tickets to enough Wiggles concerts. You become victims of the mosh pit where bopping four-year-olds stand on your hand at the height of a Wiggles frenzy. You learn all the songs in their children's shows and sing them with them, especially, of course, Thomas the Tank Engine. They're two, they're four, they're six, they're eight, hauling trucks and pulling freight. And one of the things that you give them is reading. You've really got time to read to them, which the parents don't always have. Mm. And time to dwell on the illustrations, to dwell on the words. That's a particularly wonderful experience. And then something happens which shows you how novels are written. It's happened to every grandparent. Tell us a story about. The time comes when they're not totally satisfied with the book. They want your story. And you think, God Almighty, where am I going to get a story from? And then you start with the blank air, the blank page, if you like, and you build a story, and suddenly you're getting into it. You didn't know you had it in you to get into a story, to be inventive like this, and you're enjoying it yourself. Now, that's something you give each other. You give each other the story, and that remains forever. I remember my grandson when he was about a very intelligent 17-year-old in his last year at school doing legal studies, which you couldn't do in my day. He said, why did the Allies use the untested law of crimes against humanity, which had never been used in a court before, Nuremberg, instead of genocide? And I was able to say to him, well, look, I've got a book just on that. Mm. And it was East West Street by a bloke I know in London, who's an international judge, and his name's Philippe Sands. A brilliant book, and it addresses the development of those two laws, crimes against humanity and genocide. And he explains that a lot of the Allies were guilty of genocide. And so the Germans would say, yes, but what about you and the Bengalis? You let all those Bengalis die of famine. What happened there? What about the Americans and the Indians? What happened there? Anti-Chinese riots. So they went with crimes against humanity because it wasn't as challengeable. In any case, you be Thomas and I'll be Bertie, to end up with one day he asked me at dinner, why do string theorists posit that time is an illusion, but they never say that space is an illusion, and yet the whole universe is governed by a time-space continuum. They're the same continuum. So I immediately ran into a room and had a quick encyclopedia reading or web reading of what string theory was. Fortunately, there'd been an article on that point in the paper a few days ago before, and he was still pondering it. But these are, I think, one of the most remarkable things that you're almost too busy to notice, is when little kids go from using single words and single expletives, like I had a granddaughter who called the koala the wala. I want a wala bear, she'd say. And so she would say 1 month, wala, she wanted a koala. A couple of months later, she was saying, I want a wala bear. And going from the single word to the full syntax that they do unconsciously and that happens unconsciously is astonishing to me. I mean, it is a wonder. And sometimes you're too busy just changing nappies and dealing with puke, etc., etc. You're too in the trenches to cherish those moments when you're a parent.
But Tom, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song. Could you tell us which song you've picked?
Oh, I picked the only song I've ever sung with an international celebrity, Mr. Cable, in shameful circumstances, let me say. That one day, Peter Carey, who taught with me at New York University, and I went uptown to a party at the director Fred Skepsy's place. Fred made The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith, but he also made Russia House and the movie with Meryl Streep about the dingo killing, and all manner of films. So we got to Fred's place, and all the places at the table were taken. So Fred said, "You bungles sit on the floor." Fred's always affectionate in the way he addresses you. So we sat on the floor, and we were very companionable and joining in the conversation. A kid at the end of the table, really good-looking kid, let me tell you, he began singing Tenterfield Sadler. And I drunkenly said to Peter, well, Peter Carey, this is Peter Allen's best song ever, Tenterfield Traveller. It's almost folk music. And we began singing it until after about a verse and a half, we realized how well this kid was singing it, how seriously, professionally it was. So we petered out. The kid was Hugh Jackman just before he became a star. So I've sang Tenterfield Sadler with Hugh Jackman.
Well, we have Hugh Jackman singing, unfortunately, without the assistance of our guest today, Tom Keneally, but here is Tenterfield Sadler.
The late George Walnow worked on High Street, lived on Manors. 52 years he sat on his veranda, made his saddles. And if you had questions about sheep or flowers or dogs, you just asked the saddler. He lived without sin. They're building a library for him. Time is a traveler. Tenterfield Sadler, turn your head. Ride again, Jackaroo. Think I see kangaroo up ahead. The son of George Walnow went off and got married and had a war baby. But something was wrong, and it's easier to drink than go crazy. And if there were questions about why the end was so sad, George had no answers about why his son ever had need of a gun. Time is a traveler, Tenterfield Sadler, turn your head. Ride again, Jackaroo, think I see kangaroo up ahead. The grandson of George has been all round the world and lives no special place. He changed his last name and he married a girl with an interesting face. He'd almost forgotten them all, because in the life that he leads, there's no place for George and his library or the son with a gun to belong. Except in this song, time is a meddler, Tenterfield Sadler, make your bed. Fly again, cockatoo, down on the ground, emu up ahead. Oh, time is a tale teller, Tenterfield Sadler, make your bed. Fly away, cockatoo, think I see kangaroo up ahead. Time is a traveler, Tenterfield Sadler, turn your head. Ride again, Jackaroo, think I see kangaroo up ahead.
We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And that was Tenterfield Sadler, sung to us today by Hugh Jackman at the request of our special guest, Tom Keneally, who is the author of a new book called A Bloody Good Rant. Tom, your book covers an enormous range of topics, and the history goes back beyond your 86 years. It goes back 80,000 years in the case of Aborigines, and you've also talked about the convict days. What do you think was special about a woman such as Susanna Holmes, who you name in the book?
Oh, well, now I believe she married, when a young convict woman, an ancestor of yours, Mr. Cable, Henry Cable, notable early convict and very young adolescent convict, and one of the great stories of the convict era. He and Susanna Holmes were married in the first marriage ceremony, European marriage ceremony in Sydney Cove. So from a settler point of view, they are very nearly the Adam and Eve, the Joseph and Mary of the of colonial Australia. Susanna Holmes, one of the things is endurance. As well as that, and my wife's grandmother was in this position, she was in the female factory. The women in the female factory, after Susanna Holmes, it was founded in 1818, were simply written off as depraved women. And in fact, they were the mothers of the matriarchs of Australia. Very few women from the female factory, my wife's ancestors' origin, became prostitutes. They became matriarchs of Australia. My wife's convict great-granny died giving birth to a child who lived into the 1940s. And so I think they're basically they're the mothers of Australia. Women now quite rightly talk of women's power. It is within their world. And within their diminished power, they remade the world in Australia because they had nowhere else to remake it. And this capacity on their part is contrary to the view of women as always oppressed. To use this phrase, they made their way. They made the way for women in Australia. They were in their way feminists. Now, they were spent a great part of their younger life pregnant, as did Susanna Holmes, didn't she? But and that limited their power. But they were not quite the doormats that we think they were. However, of course, the law was against their assertions, given that every wife was a chattel of her husband. So the law had further to go than they did. And there was a sense to which they dragged the law behind them. So I would like to raise a toast to Susanna Holmes, who was a teenage convict from a village in Norfolk, wasn't it? Yes. And she had a child named after the convict ship. Is that true, or was that Mary Bryan? Did she have a child soon after landing?
Well, Susanna had the first white child born in Australia. That was a girl called Diana, but they had another child named after Henry, he was also called Henry, and that was in Norwich Prison before they came to Australia.
That's right. Now, they were going to be... Was it Henry going to be shipped away and never to meet Susanna again, or his child?
Yes, correct.
And an aristocratic woman, a woman of title, raised money and drew attention to the case so that Susanna was sent and the child on the convict ship in 1787. The little family, whether they wanted or not, were reunited. And the marriage was long and successful. She lived to a great age, and I know Henry did.
Yes.
Henry lived even longer, didn't he?
Yes, he lived till he was 84.
Yeah, which is pretty good when the average life span was 30 for men and 35 for women. Or it might have been 32 for men. But in any case, it was pretty dismal.
Yes, yes. There's a lovely story. Susanna's on the boat and Henry and the baby being rowed out to the boat for the reunion. That must have been a very emotional scene, I think, back in England.
Ah, wonderful, yes. I think they were very much in love at that stage, too. Yes. As you can only be when you're 16 or 17. And they stole lead off a church, which was one of the statutory abuses. His father and he and an accomplice stole lead, and I believe his father was executed. At 87, my details about convicts are getting a bit confused.
No, you've got it pretty right.
The way you talk about Henry and Susanna, and they must be presences in your life, that's what it was like for us. So our fortiori, it must have been very like that for the Kate growing up with Henry and Susanna. Given that Henry was became such a noticeable citizen, and he was into sandalwood cargoes, astounding.
Yes,
he was... So he was one of the affluent men of Sydney Cove, like Dr. Redfern, like Darcy Wentworth, who founded my old suburb, Homebush.
Yes, that's true. And it was said of Henry, yes, that he was so wealthy that at his table you could have a choice of red or white wine. So there you go.
And this is pretty classy at that stage. The closest winemakers were actually in... South Africa, weren't they?
Probably, yes. Tom, I so enjoy talking to you. I'm sure we could keep going all day, but unfortunately we've run out of time here. I'd like to finish with the closing note to your book, actually. May you escape the gallows, avoid distress, and live as happy as a trout. And I'd like to wish you that. And, Tom, thank you very much for being such a special guest on Dad's on the Air.
No, not at all. It was a great honour. I always love meeting cables.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. You might have some points to raise as of what we've heard from Tom today, but go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to your favourite podcast or our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.